This is Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide. Today on the show, Dustin Johnson, energy campaigner for the Prairie Chapter of the Sierra Club. Music by Damon and Drew Nelson. This is Rage, building a community of resistance one podcast at a time. Hello and welcome to Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide, coming to you from occupied Amiskwisi, Wisconsin. I'm your host, Seymour Life, and a special hello to all those resisting pipelines wherever they live. I met Dustin Johnson at this year's Everyone's Downstream. He leads the Sierra Club campaign against the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline, as well as the tar sands, and heads up other energy issues. I caught him at his office, and I started by asking him to introduce himself.
My name is Dustin Johnson. I'm Jim Shen from the Northwest Coast, born and raised in Prince Rupert and Lac aux Lambs. Currently living in Edmonton as an energy campaigner working for Sierra Club Prairie Chapter.
Who is Enbridge and why are they building this pipeline? Where is it starting from? Where is it going?
So Enbridge is a Calgary-based pipeline corporation. They're the biggest pipeline corporation in North America, and they want to transport 500,000 barrels of tar sands crude oil per day from the tar sands to Kitimat on the BC Northwest Coast. And it originated in Bretterheim, which is just northeast of Edmonton, for nearly 1,200 kilometer distance to Kitimat. And the thing is that it will pass over to 50 different communities and their territories, and majority of them are unceded territories in BC, which means that they've never surrendered treaties and have never signed agreements legally ceding their land for the indigenous communities. And the majority of communities of Western Prince George are unanimously opposed to the Enbridge pipeline. And Enbridge wants to do this because there's a huge demand for tar sands crude in Asia and America, mostly America. And you see the passageway to China, to Asia, to Russia, closest in northern BC. So it's seen as a cheaper source, but in reality, it's the most devastating and costly source for economic and environmental impacts that it have on the long-term process.
Why is it starting in Bruderheim?
Bruderheim is just a small, like, senior citizens retirement community. And it's a very heavily industrialized community, you know, just, it's pretty close to Upgrader Alley in Fort Saskatchewan, and there's not really much going on in that area. So Enbridge, they're based in Calgary, but they have huge office buildings in downtown Edmonton. Just recently have they been, seeing some opposition to Enbridge, to their pipe dreams in Edmonton with anti-pipelines, anti-tankers, anti-tar sands campaigns. So it's where they're expecting the least resistance because they're seeing more resistance on the BC Northwest Coast and the BC Interior, but they're not expecting that in Edmonton, where historically they just assume the population to be so complicit, brainwashed into accepting whatever tar sand schemes are being proposed. Because at the end of the day, the Alberta government still has an ERCB, which approves projects, still has 100% approval rating. But, Enbridge can be making an example of the diversity and amounted to different opposition, trying to stop the pipeline project.
When are they actually going to start building the pipeline?
It's been delayed. It keeps getting delayed because Enbridge recently just wrapped up their seventh round of community advisory boards. So they have to go back and do a joint review panel process again. And they're not expecting any construction or any, initial startup until 2012. And, that may be delayed again because just recently, in BC, the House of Commons voted to uphold the tanker ban on BC Northwest Coast, to reinstate the federal tanker ban and a moratorium on offshore tankers on BC Northwest Coast, which was put in place in the 60s or 70s. There's been a very diverse group of voices, opposing tanker traffic and the pipelines, because the pipelines can't exist without the tanker traffic, and tanker traffic can't exist without the Enbridge Gateway pipeline. And Enbridge Gateway is just, it's just two of the pipelines. There's three other companies that want to build the same, we want to follow pretty much the same path in transporting tar sands crude and condensate to dilute the heavy oil. And if one of them is successful, it would necessitate the rise of tanker traffic on the Northwest Coast. And there's a diversity of people that are opposing it in groups and communities, but the tar sands need to be resisted as a whole, as a collective giga project, and not just as separate projects, because if you have one becoming successful, you know, eventually that'll lead to building supporting infrastructure to maintain tar sands expansion.
That's the big thing, isn't it? That really, without the tar sands, the pipeline wouldn't be necessary. And this is, do you think that the Chinese market is also important in driving this? Or do you think it's more the American market or both?
Well, that's interesting. The thing is there's some arguments being made on the American side that, you know, America is the number one consumer of tar sands in the world, specifically the military. Mm-hmm. And American military serves a neo-colonial role in the world, and, you know, imposing American regimes and, you know, throughout the world, and currently in an ongoing war in Iraq and Afghanistan and other occupations throughout the country, throughout the world. It's sort of a racist argument, you know, why let China, as an emerging superpower, you know, compete with America for these natural resources? You know, American military and American government, more of the conservatives were, you know, see the tar sands as a safe and reliable source of tar sands crude instead of in the Middle East or, you know, Saudi Arabia or Venezuela, which actually has more capacity for tar sands than in Alberta. The argument we made, you know, opposed to China's demand is, you know, a very cutthroat capitalism. You know, we'll give them limited access, but they won't benefit to the extent that Americans will.
Well, you mentioned that a lot of opposition through BC, certainly because of the coast. What are you seeing in Alberta?
Well, in Alberta, Enbridge is pretty established. You know, they have a pretty bad track record in Alberta as well for pipeline spills. You know, they had since 1992, they had 7 pipeline spills, and Hardisty, Alberta was one of the biggest ones. And their pipeline infrastructure heading into the States, just this past summer, they had a huge pipeline spill in the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, which spilled nearly 1 million liters of toxic crude into the river. And then another spill in Illinois. And so that's 2 Enbridge spills just within the past year. And in Alberta, you know, they have pipelines going through the Alexander First Nation, you know, right outside of Edmonton. I believe that's called the Alliance Pipeline. All these other pipelines that are, you know, been in existence for, you know, decades. It's the biggest pipeline corporation in North America. But Enbridge does not expect to see the amount of opposition they see in Alberta compared to what they see in BC. But that needs to change, because we need an overall collective psychological shift in terms of the way people perceive tar sands, addiction on oil, the overall bigger picture of, you know, what this is doing to the environment, what it's doing to future generations, and what kind of legacy we want to leave for people. And these kinds of projects people need to speak out against them, but they need to stop them.
Now, one of the things that I noticed that opponents for, and certainly the spokespeople for Enbridge, are saying are things like, because you have a plane crash doesn't mean you stop flying, in that they're trying to isolate the conversation down to just a pipeline. But it's more than just a pipeline, so...
Yeah, there's, like I said, there's over 40 communities that will be impacted, like, within the region of the, you know, the pipeline route. 1,170 kilometers is the exact distance, you know, nearly 1,200 kilometers. And it's a very rugged terrain that, you know, the pipeline is proposed to cross, you know, nearly 1,000 water streams, including rivers and lakes and salmon-bearing creeks and... pristine boreal forest and a lot of wildlife habitat dependent upon the path that pipeline expects to be built upon. Enbridge is proposing, you know, a few jobs, but it's pretty minimal if you break it down to how many jobs would be available per community. And the jobs that are being proposed are, you know, very low level. In, you know, classic pattern with this kind of corporate invasion, foreign workers will be brought in, you know, people from Nova Scotia, people from the States, people from Mexico, from China, while local people won't benefit from it. It will be a classic pattern be repeated, because that's the only thing that Enbridge is really offering and promising people, is that, you know, there's going to be a lot of economic development because of this. You know, Enbridge is the biggest pipeline expansion for the BC Northwest Coast, but it's not the biggest in the overall tar sands scheme of things. It's a pretty big project for BC and Northern Alberta. You know, it's seen as a catalyst for the other pipelines, but no one else is really talking about the other pipelines, because they want to make an example of Enbridge. So I believe it's just as important to stop those other pipelines from ever developing, because they're waiting to see, you know, how well Enbridge will do.
So recently also Enbridge has offered 10% to First Nations. Is this sort of a practice that you've seen before, and is that sort of part of the scheme to get approval?
Yeah, it's showing a, you know, desperation for Enbridge to, you know, to get any kind of positive support for the project, you know, in offering these equity shares and revenue, so-called benefit agreements. But in the biggest scheme of things, you know, there's going to be strings attached to it, and they haven't clearly stated that. They have a few, you know, token hand-picked First Nations leaders and administrators, I call them, who are, you know, promoting this project, but they don't have the blessing of their elders and their hereditary people in their communities. You know, the overall grassroots people aren't in favor of it. Unanimously, it has been shown to that most people in those communities are opposed to it. A very small few that are actually promoting it from a First Nations perspective. This tactic on Enbridge's part to, you know, offer some kind of revenue sharing and equity shares is a desperate move for, you know, to try to garner up whatever support that they can. There's mounting opposition to their project, and I think as time goes on and they keep slipping up, and, you know, more and more truth gets out there, more and more people see, you know, the reality of the project and increase the pressure put on them, then, you know, Enbridge will eventually be defeated.
How is tar sands oil getting to the coast right now?
Yeah, some of it's going by semi-truck on Highway 16 and by rail as well. And Enbridge was promoting promoted an alternative path was instead of using the underground pipeline to have a pipeline on rails, so to ship the total capacity through the rail system, the CN Rail. And there's only one railway system from Alberta to BC, and that's the CN Rail, which pretty much parallels the Highway 16 route.
Now, recently, there was an action at the Enbridge was meeting here.
That action was to disrupt the community advisory board in Edmonton, and it was the last stop of the round seven of Enbridge's community consultations. And the intention there was to disrupt the meeting, but to show Enbridge that there's opposition to the Northern Gateway Pipeline project in Edmonton specifically, close to the headquarters and close to where they least expect it. And also on the same day, there is 61 First Nations assigned a declaration to oppose Enbridge, and most of them were communities located on the Fraser River watershed. But you know, it's a pretty significant area that Enbridge wants to trespass through as well, and it shows like a lot of opposition to Enbridge, because a lot of these communities aren't just starting to talk to each other and start to strategize around realizing this Enbridge Gateway project as a common enemy and common obstacle, and find ways to resist it collectively. So the action in Edmonton was really just to show Enbridge at least there's some opposition in Edmonton where they least expect it, because it's the last stop of the community meetings, and historically they haven't really had any opposition to their pipeline projects in Edmonton.
Anything else that you want to add to it? Anything about the points that you think is important for people to know?
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the other pipelines as well that would be supplementing the Northern Gateway Pipeline and in overall tar sands expansion to BC from Alberta. You know, it's Kinder Morgan's TMX pipeline, which is an expansion and a Northern Lake construction of a pipeline following pretty much a similar path as Enbridge, but it breaks off from the Trans Mountain pipeline, which goes through the Jasper and Rocky Mountains, and from Valemont it goes northwest from there. And then there's the Pembina Pacific Spirit Trail pipeline, and then Pacific Northern Gas KSL pipeline. And if any one of those pipelines are built, that would it would increase the rise of tanker traffic. And even though if there's a ban, those tankers will still go in there. There's different tankers from Russia, from Asia, mostly American. If there's more tar sands showing up on the coast in Kitimat, Prince Rupert is seen as a secondary container port to expand the existing container port there to facilitate tar sands crude. Currently, in Prince Rupert and in the Fairview Terminal, there's caustic soda, which is directly from the tar sands. And the Lucklamas First Nations, the band manager, is from Arkansas. He's a corrupt person who the community was trying to oust through a petition. He has plans to support condensate being shipped in from Russia to go directly to the tar sands to help thin crude oil. So this is very silent agreement, you know, that this band manager who claims to represent the Lac Lamas First Nation to support tar sands, industry overall. That area is kind of in a media blackout because there's not really much news being shed on it. It's important to show the overall picture and the connection to the tar sands, but also to the American dependency on oil.
Great.
Thanks.
That was Damon with Revolution. What Dustin was talking about, the fact that there is more than one piece to the puzzle, is very important. There is more than one pipeline, more than one refinery, more than one strip mine in this giga project that everyone agrees is the largest massive project on the planet. What is insane is that it is also the most destructive in the cost of lives, in the cost of damage to future generations, and in the pathological insistence of the supporters that either the damage is not happening or it is acceptable, going to great lengths to make it appear scientifically sound with terms like overburden and levels of toxicity, as if there should be levels of toxicity. I didn't get a chance to talk to Dustin about the Royal Society of Canada's expert panel on the environmental and health impacts of the Canada's oil sands industry. There has been amazingly little criticism of the report itself. Probably not coincidental that it was released in and around the holidays. In fact, what has happened is there has been greater questioning of the criticism of the tar sands in mainstream media. It took me a few days to realize my biggest problem with the Royal Canadian Society's so-called expert report, and that was what is its purpose? To discredit science? As Ariel Durange of the Rainforest Action Network points out, in a quote, this report seems to play down some of the only independent scientific research done on the Athabasca water system and traditional food sources in the area. But I don't think they truly questioned the science, they just ignored it. The purpose of the report was made clear in this statement by Alice Martins, a Cree elder, about the report. And I quote, what is terrible is that this report suggests that the indigenous people who have the traditional knowledge, the people of the land, do not know what they're talking about when it comes to the environment and health impacts in their communities. That was what the purpose of the report was, to silence traditional knowledge and the traditional people living in the area, to discredit their voices, because they were the most effective. If you need to rape and pillage the land to get what you want, to fulfill your greed, then you need to silence and remove those who love and respect that land. This is what science is used for, the silencing of traditional knowledge all over the world, especially women's traditional knowledge. It is the silencing of traditional knowledge that allies need to stop. In one place, I believe that they can be effective. Environmental groups need to take on traditional knowledge as fact and promote it as such, not co-opt it, support it, promote it, as they would any scientific finding. And again, I quote Alice Martin, quote, it is evident that the ugly truth about the tar sands is not what the government wants to hear, because it will impact the economy in a negative way. But the question is, how will this lack of truth impact the people who have lived on this land for generations? End quote. And I ask you, communities of traditional knowledge all over the world impacted life on our Mother Earth, our home. Just look around. Taking us out is Drew Nelson with Eagle Rock. Folks, now more than ever, the resistance needs you.
Sun breaks over the yellow dog, call the thunder down. Feel the wind rush against my face. Sound of the children break the stillness of the morning. Red tail rises not a mile from this place. And all through the night they kept the fire burning. All through the night they sang. Call the directions, put tobacco down. Prayers and smoke, dancing on the wind. Here at Eagle Rock, we will take our stand. Here at Eagle Rock, of our people, the redemption of our land. There's a fire burning in our hearts, Ishko Day, Ishko Day. For 1,000 years, this place has been saved. Will be for 1,000 more. And all those who love her, we cry all our relation. See the old ones sing, see the young ones grow. Here at Eagle Rock, we will take our stand. Here at Eagle Rock, redemption of our land. There's a fire burning in our hearts. Ishko Day, Ishko Day. Thank you. place is more important than a mine. A love that is greater than any corporation. Ask the eagle, ask the bear, ask the pines. But here at Eagle Rock, we will take our stand. Here at Eagle Rock, we will pray for the healing of our people, the redemption of our land. There's a fire burning. Here at Eagle Rock, we will take our stand. Here at Eagle Rock, we will pray for the healing of our people, for the healing of our land. There's a fire burning in our hearts.